This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. With Donald Trump newly inaugurated as the 45th president of the United States, he comes in riding on campaign promises to zealously protect the homeland, which he named as one of the many catastrophic incompetencies of the Obama administration.
The Obama administration, with the support of Hillary Clinton and others, has also damaged our security by restraining our intelligence gathering, and we have just no intelligence gathering information.
Well, not only did Obama nicely tidy up the White House for the new first family, he left quite a housewarming present. Under 11th-hour rule changes to Executive Order 12333, the National Security Agency has been given unprecedented power to share raw surveillance data with the 16 other government intelligence agencies. Nate Cardozo is a senior staff attorney on the Electronic Frontier Foundation's Digital Civil Liberties team. Nate, welcome to OTM.
Thanks for having me.
Order 12333, what is its significance?
So 12333 was originally enacted by President Reagan back in the 80s, and it is the authorization for the American intelligence community, which is all of our intelligence services, collection of non-U.S. person data when they want to wiretap the entire country of the Bahamas, which happened. It was done under 12333. When the NSA wanted to collect every cell phone call in Iraq and Afghanistan, it was done under Section 12333. It's very convenient in that it doesn't require any court intervention. It doesn't require any statutory basis. It has very little reporting requirements to Congress or an inspector general. The only caveat is that Americans can't be the target, supposedly, of collection under 12333. But Americans can be the target through the backdoor. This is what's called the backdoor search problem. If data is collected under 12333, Americans' names can be run through the database of that collected data without going to court and getting a warrant.
And what's changed?
Well, until this rule change went into effect, the only agency that had access to the raw, unfiltered signals intelligence collection was the National Security Agency. This is a lot of the material that we saw glimpses of in the Snowden documents. This is the sort of material that, you know, back in the old days when the NSA would tap a Soviet submarine fiber optic cable, the intelligence analyst sitting within NSA got to look at it. No one else got to see the unfiltered data. That all changes.
Now, going back to 9/11, we remember the connecting the dots problem where one agency didn't know what the other agency was doing and failed to see a terror plot hidden more or less in plain view. It seems to me that if you're looking at the glass half full, you would see this as giving the government the ability to suss out conspiracies better than it previously had, no?
Perhaps, but of course the NSA has already been permitted to share this kind of data with anyone who it deems necessary to see it. FBI, DHS, DEA have all had access to this kind of data since the collection started. Now what happens is not just the NSA, whose job it is to look it out for the national security of the United States, but also organizations like FBI or DEA, who are domestic law enforcement organizations, get to see this raw, unfiltered data, which includes collection on an unknown but massive number of Americans. This is not purely foreign intelligence information. This is information that may include my emails, your phone calls, all of our text messages, especially if they're going abroad. Depending on how the information is collected and depending on where the collection sites are, of course, all of that's top secret as well, selections of that data can now go to law enforcement without passing through NSA first, and law enforcement is free to sift through all this stuff collected without a warrant, without even a judge's signature, and look for evidence of Americans committing crimes.
Now, there is a really bizarre provision, it seems to me, in this order, and that concerns what a police agency is entitled to reveal about its source of information. It gets a hot tip from the NSA and commences an investigation, makes an arrest, but cannot cite the intelligence as probable cause for commencing the investigation. So what does that do to a legal case against a criminal defendant?
Well, it makes defending said cases quite hard. That process has a nickname in the intelligence community. It's called parallel construction. And we at the Electronic Frontier Foundation and our friends at ACLU believe that parallel construction is illegal and unconstitutional. There are documented cases of Americans who have been prosecuted based on information collected without a warrant by the NSA, and the fact that the prosecutions were based on warrantless collection was hidden not just from the defendant, but from the judges as well, at least at the beginning of these cases. A little bit of that changed after Snowden. We think that process is a blatant abuse of the NSA's collection capabilities.
Now, the Obama administration had a rather uneven record on issues of transparency and privacy, surveillance, and so forth. Mm-hmm. But I'm very curious as to what prompted it to make this rule change on the very eve of the Trump presidency.
Well, frankly, inertia. This rule change was proposed a year ago. It was first reported by Charlie Savage in the New York Times in February of 2016. And it's taken this long to get the rules finalized. My presumption was that the National Security Council and the NSA assumed that this rule change would be coming into effect as President-elect Clinton was preparing to take power. One argument that I've heard from people in the national security establishment is that civil libertarians should be happy that this rule change is going into effect now, just before Trump gets his hands on the national security community. The theory there is that this rule change is better than what Trump would have put in. That may be true, but it is cold comfort to civil libertarians like myself that this rule change is bad, but not as bad as what Trump might have otherwise done. Of course, there's nothing preventing Trump from simply making the rules even worse than they are today.
Now, you've told me about 12333 based on what you know. But you can't tell us what you don't know because portions of it are redacted.
One of the most disturbing redactions is in the list of reasons that someone can be targeted for collection under 12333. The second reason is that you're an agent of a foreign power. The third reason is that the collection might have some foreign intelligence significance. But what's the first reason? We don't know. We don't know the primary reason for targeting under this authority. We're talking about how much data this is potentially opening up to domestic law enforcement agencies who didn't have it before. And we don't even know the first thing about who's being targeted under 12333.
Nate, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Nate Cardozo is a senior staff attorney on the Electronic Frontier Foundation's Digital Civil Liberties team.
A final thought on Schadenfreude. It's been a go-to emotion for many in recent days.
Things are so bad in the inaugural planning that not one D.C. area marching band has applied to march in Trump's inauguration parade. And you know,
it's all very sad. Paul Anka and Jennifer Holliday also backed out. So far, the only celebrity who hasn't backed out of the inauguration is Donald Trump himself. But
even on Friday, New York Magazine, a bona fide member of the snarky set, among whom we must count ourselves, savored the new president's echo of the Batman villain, Bane.
Because today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another, or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
The oppressors of generations who have kept you down with myths of opportunity. And we give it back to you, the people.
Funny, but if we've learned anything this past year, it's that, though the most powerful man in the world is prickly, he's also impervious to jokes. In fact, they may make him stronger. I'm not calling out the comics, that's their job. But the American majority had better stop snickering, or the last laugh may be on us.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, and Jesse Brenneman. We had more help from Michael Loewinger, Sara Khari, Leah Feder, and Kate Bakhtiarova. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Terrence Bernardo.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the Overbrook Foundation and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.